When I was leaving, one of the assistants that knew me ran out to the elevator, asked in a frantic manner, "You're not here for an assistant's job, are you?" And I had a little chuckle. I said, "No, I've never been anybody's assistant."
Stand by, please. Rolling on six. On six.
Welcome back to another episode of Art World Talks with Adam Scull and co-host Patrick Smith. Curtis Knapp, welcome to Art World Talks. I'd love to hear the beginnings of your photography career.
I moved from Garden City, Long Island into New York City about 1970-71. And I was attending Parsons School of Design. I could only get into the school in a graphics class, which was nice in the long run. And I had a photo class. Went into the Parsons School of Design artist program in the graphics department. I spent most of my time in the illustration classes, such as Maurice Sindak's class. And after leaving Parsons, I tried to follow my heart, and it was in children's illustration, which led to everything from Sesame Street magazine to porno magazines in New York City. We illustrators took any jobs we could get. At the time, the Village Voice was doing little $25 ads for the bands playing at Max's and CBGB's. Place the ad in or go around with the paste and put up signs on lampposts in the dead of winter. Somewhere in there, I started to photograph people such as Mink DeVille, John Collins, other bands that were playing. Slowly started to take more and more photographs. I moved to Athens, Georgia, took pictures of the B-52s in front of the power plant, which we used for the first Max's Kansas City flyer. Thereafter, moving back to New York, and I gave up illustration after a few years and started to take photographs on a more regular basis.
When did you move from Athens back to New York City?
I moved back to New York City around 79 or 80. The B-52s were making their move up there around the same time, although I didn't see them that much in New York. I had taken pictures of some people like Mink DeVille back in the dressing rooms, portrait style. Unbeknownst to me, it was formulating the type of photography I wanted to take, which were basically men's portraits. I didn't do that on purpose. It just seems to happen. And I joke, I hate waiting for makeup and stylists to be fixing up women for 2 hours. It was my very first studio portraits. It got in Art Direction magazine amongst the best 45 jackets of the year. GQ came around to use me for some of their fashion.
You must have been thrilled by all this.
It happened within about 4 months. And I just gave up illustration somewhere around 81. 2 or 3 years after that made my portfolio interesting, I will say. When I moved to Japan, 83, 84, I got off the plane with a celebrity portfolio, which sucked me right into advertising because the Japanese utilized celebrities in major advertising. It was quite lovely.
Curtis, you once said that Irving Penn thought that there should be space between the photographer and the sitter. Could you tell us about that?
It took me a while to digest what he was telling me in our brief time together. Xeroxes of all of his portraits, he was himself thumbtacking on his bulletin board in his office. It is at that time I had asked him, should I be printing for the print or for reproduction in newspaper and magazine? He said the print should be for the print's sake itself. And when he did point out what you're asking about my portrait of John Giorno looking a little disheveled, he liked this image in my book very much and told me I should go for this type of thing. I should not see the person come into the studio and rush over to them and take their coat and get them tea. Get in there with a personal tone right away. I should let an assistant or a stylist take care of that and stand back, take care of the mathematics of the film. This leaves a space of sorts that keeps it a little bit edgy, is what I believe he's saying. Coming onto the set, instructing them, there's that momentary sort of instantaneousness. If they're too comfortable, okay, let's take some pictures, man, you know, okay. I just tell people, okay, face the light, eyes to the camera, chin down, click, click. People are out of there within two rolls of film. Madonna got four.
What a different approach. I always assumed you wanted to warm up your subjects prior to a shoot to get away from the tension.
This is the point where I wondered about Penn's point of view for years. Until that photograph got me the Apple computer campaign when Apple was breaking in big time. As I said, for years I didn't quite get it. I felt at the time that if I followed Mr. Penn's advice, I wouldn't get nearly as many people to come over to my hotel room, my dining room, my little studio where 70% of my portraits are really cold calling people. I disagreed with what he was saying, although my inner body was all aglow by even having time with Mr. Penn. I still don't follow this rule. I disagreed with him then, and I 90% disagree with him now in my case for portraits in my book projects or my folio. I wouldn't get as many clients to come or tell their friends, oh, Curtis is a right guy. Go on over. He actually puts a good image. And I think people know this, and especially now that I have images out there, they can see that. I have my mannerisms, my sense of humor. All of that is a part of the me. But in my case, I'm trying to make the most stunning but personal picture. I want to keep that per se, so my images, if some editor is doing a project, they're going to say, Knapp's portrait, and I'm going to stick to that at this point.
How did you meet Irving Penn to begin with?
I had a friend, Wong, a beauty editor department at Vogue. She knew him, and I had some acquaintances that were assisting with him, sort of came together. I went over and rang the buzzer and met with the guy. He knew I was coming. When I was leaving, one of the assistants that knew me ran out to the elevator, asked in a frantic manner, you're not here for an assistant's job, are you? And I had a little chuckle. I said, no, I've never been anybody's assistant. I had someone who showed me how the hostel worked, how a speedotron strobe worked. And then they left me alone in the studio to take my Method Actor's 45 cover. I never did assist anybody.
To my understanding, before you met Andy, you were already working for Interview Magazine.
I was given an illustration job by the art director 2 or 3 years earlier. Very unsuccessful. I did not turn it in. In actuality, I'm not very good at illustrating the human face as a portrait. I'm better at fantasy art, almost Aubrey Beardsley style. A few years later, when I started to take portraits, I had done John Giorno for Interview. Then it was another year or so later, I got in touch with Andy to do his work. I don't think I was ever a part of the Warhol inner circle, not by any stretch. I didn't schmooze with those people. I don't think at that time I was very smart about schmoozing. And I really didn't have a clue on how to present myself in the commercial advertising world of, let us call it, uptown at that time.
For the current issue of Lit Magazine, you have a portfolio of photos about Andy. Could you tell us about how that came about?
I started out by doing Jim Carroll and Laurie Anderson and a few other people. And one of the later ideas was to have celebrities invite someone to dinner. Had Paul Davis invite Shakespeare. I had Klaus Nomi invite Mickey Mouse. Everybody cooked in their home and served, and it was almost a food portrait of them and food. With Andy, he did not cook. I ended up taking him out to lunch. But Andy was very interesting to me to get in my portfolio, and this was a good vehicle for that. Andy originally came over to my studio across the street, so clickety-click, I did my formal black and whites of him at my studio. A week or two later, the color pictures of him painting the red, which I believe ended up to be the gigantic crosses we did over at his place, only to be interrupted if Princess So-and-so came in. But that came about as a magazine article I was doing for a Japanese magazine over there.
Those photographs also appear in the book Unseen Warhol, which are interviews with people who knew Andy back later 70s and 80s.
Rizzoli Publishing did that book.
How did they know about those photos?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
One of my students at the Smithsonian Institute said, Curtis, you're America's most famous unknown photographer.
So what was it like being with Andy as he's working at the studio?
I think he was, nervous about being the center. I noted when I thought along those lines, he was always taking pictures of other people. Or he was always in a crowd or at a party being photographed. Or he was always on vacation. But I found a nervousness with him a little bit. I think it is a part of his everyday personality also. He may even pretend to be a little introverted. I tried not to get that in my film. I wanted him to be there. It's just him. There aren't other people around. But I like my formal portrait of him we took at my studio in the black and white. He's straight-faced. He's looking right at the camera. He's not wearing eyeglasses. But he had a shyness.
Please join us next time for the second part of our interview with Curtis Knapp.